Hey guys, this is Kenan Thompson. I have a problem with you. Yes, you. None of y'all told me that Auto Trader has millions of new and used cars that I can shop from home. I thought we were friends. I put smiles on your face, but I'm not smiling. No one told me that with Auto Trader, a dealer can deliver cars to my home or that I could shop by price on Auto Trader. No one. Consider this friendship that you just learned we had officially over. Finally, it's easy. Auto Trader.
What's up, everybody? Nick Costos here. College basketball is about to get crazy, and BetQL makes it easier than ever to cash your bets. BetQL analyzes every single tournament matchup so you can succeed with your bracket pools and individual game bets. Which teams will pull off an upset? Who's going to cover the spread? BetQL handles all the hard work so you can win more consistently. Head to BetQL.com today to start your 3-day free trial. That's BetQL.com. BetQL.com today to start your 3-day free trial.
Well, that was fun. Man, that was fun. I love college basketball. I love March Madness. We got three delicious games with wild momentum swings, all kinds of drama, huge shots, mega defense. The stars came out to play. New York City, Madison Square Garden, and Las Vegas at T-Mobile Arena. Thursday set us up for what is a weekend in which men's college basketball and the Final 16 will be trimmed to just four who have a chance for the national championship. And, man, these teams, these athletes worthy of the stages. That was so much fun. I hope you enjoyed it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We are going to go through each of the games, which had very different flavors to them, and yet epic is what I think you can say about at least two of them, and another with big-time surprises. There's just a lot to pick apart, and we have all the reaction coming up in 1 hour live from Las Vegas. Our friend Arash Markazi will join us, and we'll talk about his perspective because he was right on the corner of the court for the UConn victory, which was, it was a dominant performance by the Huskies. They now have three wins in the NCAA tournament of at least 15 points. So beware of UConn. It feels like the Huskies are barking again and they are back. But he also had that corner perspective for UCLA and Gonzaga. Wild swings. A first half that belonged to UCLA, and yet, I have to tell you what I saw that indicated to me UCLA might be in trouble. Even as the Bruins were building a double-figure lead and were up 13 at the half, there were signs. One sign in particular. Plus, we know that Gonzaga has a track record. Its experience in these humongous moments on the biggest stages. You've got guys who've been there, done that. And while they've not won a national championship, Drew Timmy, for instance, has played in more than 10 NCAA tournament games, which is a decided advantage. Do you know he now has an NCAA tournament record? 10 games in March Madness of at least 20 points. That's just the number of games in which he's had 20 points. That type of experience is invaluable. There is no shortcut to that kind of experience. And he's not alone. Anton Watson, the best defender on Gonzaga. We talked to him last year going into March Madness. Malachi Smith. Now, Malachi's story is a little different, but he was the Southern Conference Player of the Year before he transferred to Gonzaga. And so he's been in the tournament more than once. This just happens to be his first time with the Zags. And then there's Mark Few, their fearless leader, who's got about 30 of these under his belt and 8 straight Sweet 16s. Does UCLA have experience? Absolutely. And so this was going to be a heavyweight fight, and it delivered. It lived up to the marquee sign. And so we're going to talk about UCLA Gonzaga first, but Congratulations to K-State. The Wildcats of Kansas State surviving Michigan State and honestly making the defense that is typically so physical and tough and resilient and tenacious, that Tom Izzo defense gave up a lot of points and a lot of easy points late in the game. Layups, alley-oops. Marquise Noel, Madison Square Garden will not forget the 5'8" Harlem native who got to play in his hometown and had the game of his life. So there's a lot that we can peel back about these first four games. We want to dive in first, though, and let you hear the big moments as well as hear the reaction from the guys who were out there, the coaches who were on the sidelines. Love the atmosphere. At least these two arenas in Vegas and New York delivered quite the backdrop and the soundtrack for the Sweet 16. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Looking forward to connecting with you. I was a little bit late to the party, but I realized it was National Puppy Day, probably right before basketball tipped off, or pretty darn close to when basketball is tipping off. And even though Penny's not a puppy, she's still a puppy at heart. And so I did share my latest pet. This is actually a photo of Penny that was taken last weekend. It's one of her favorite things to do. I'm not going to tell you. You have to go check it out. It's one of her favorite things to do. Clearly, she's been influenced by the time we've spent at the beach. So you can check that out on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I will make sure that we get the photo up on Facebook as well.
I love puppies.
In honor of National Puppy Day. Who does not love puppies? Thank you, Gronk. And then, if you haven't seen our latest video, it's on our YouTube channel, but the link is on both Twitter and Facebook. We capitalize on the fever surrounding March Madness. Gosh, it feels like it was the perfect time to put out this latest video. We have our Stairway to Seven most compelling postseasons in sports. You can tell us what's missing. I just want you to know Jay picked his own and went off the beaten path. He decided he was going to march to the beat of a different drummer. So good for him. All right, so we're going to dive in. We've also got a little bit on the football gridiron. So Bryce Young and his pro day, that took place on Thursday as part of Alabama's pro day, but certainly Bryce Young being the focal point with the teams that are picking at the top of the NFL draft in roughly a month. We've also got a funny message from Tom Brady. Man, the guy can't sit still. He's got a lot on his plate, a lot of business ventures. He's got money to burn, and so he's busy. And did Ezekiel Elliott put out a wish list of sorts? Plus a couple of injuries from Major League Baseball, one that's pretty devastating, right on the heels of us talking about the Phillies this morning with Ike Reese, or early on Thursday morning with Ike Reese. So we'll give you the latest. We're going to launch you forward into the weekend. I'm trying not to be too giddy over the fact that it's almost Friday because I have yard work and taxes in my future, and that does not sound exciting, but there will be basketball to keep me company, and of course I'll get to sleep, I hope. I hope there'll be some sleep in my future. I've almost given up. It's been 2 weeks without, so maybe I should give up. Put so much pressure on myself.
Don't put that out there.
It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. So to Las Vegas we go, and UCLA using its ability to move the ball around and also the way that Jaime Jaquez was able to find seams. And it wasn't just him. I mean, UCLA, they do a real good job of getting a bunch of different guys involved. And so while the Bruins were building a 13-point lead, Gonzaga was much more one-dimensional. And yet, the fact that we've seen this from Gonzaga in the past playing their best basketball at the end. They know how to close. One thing that stood out to me, and I saw this about midway through the first half, Jaquez, who is the Pac-12 player of the year, was sucking wind. I mean, they're not even at halftime, and he is... I mean, these guys... UCLA was already worn... Not worn out, but already breathing heavy, and I don't want to say taking plays off, because that's not fair, but there were times, and I was focused specifically on Jaime, when he's bent over, or he's not hustling up the court quite as fast as he could be because he's tired. Now, keep in mind, UCLA is down two starters. And even though the Bruins and no one else has played since last weekend, it's just a lot of basketball and a lot of minutes. And so even in the first half, as the Bruins are building their lead, I can see that and it's not really conditioning. It's just minutes. It's just wear and tear. It's just, at this point in the season, you've played so much basketball, it's survive and advance. So coming out of the halftime locker room, the Bulldogs are on a tear. And this is when Gonzaga's experience is shining like a floodlight. I want to say it happened fast, but it was as though Gonzaga had flipped a switch. And sometimes real good teams, they just find a different gear.
Smith driving left into the paint, spins right, floats it up with the right hand and scores. Malachi Smith with 9 in the second half, 11 in the game. Timmy's got it against Nuba. Timmy looking, spins to the baseline, lays it up, and in! 35 in the ballgame for Timmy. 65-61, Gonzaga up 4. Smith makes the pass to Timmy, left baseline, dribbles right into the paint, out to Strother, his 3, got it! 10 in the game for Julian Strother, 68-62, Gonzaga. And UCLA will take time. The Bruins have gone more than 8 minutes without a field goal. They now trail by 6. Timmy up top, Malachi Smith 3 is good! Smith knocked it in! It's a 10-point Gonzaga lead, 2.5 remaining, 72-62, Gonzaga.
That's Ryan Radke on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. From down 13 at the half to up 10 in the final minutes of this game, and yet it was not over. But here's what I mean about UCLA, and it's part of it. Credit Gonzaga for its defense, absolutely. Malachi Smith, Anton Watson, credit them for the way that they challenged the Bruins. But part of what was happening with UCLA is they were exhausted and they did not have the lift in their legs anymore. A lot of shots coming up short. And when they're short, it's because you don't have the power and the strength in your legs. And so UCLA goes 12 plus minutes without a field goal. The fact that the Bruins were even around at the end of this game is phenomenal, considering 12-plus minutes without a made bucket. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Of course, in the final minute, that 10-point lead for Gonzaga disappeared.
Tiger Campbell off to David Singleton, dribbles on the right, gets it up top, Jaquez, pump fake the 3, drives right, Jaquez on his way to the bucket, puts it up, in and 1! Campbell dribbling right into the paint, gets it to Jaquez, puts it up with the right hand, in and 1! Jaquez did it again! Foul is going to go against Timmy, it's his second, and Jaquez can make it a 3-point game with 45 seconds left! Campbell into the front court. Drop it off for Jaquez. Jaquez drives right down the lane. Puts it up off the window and scores. 29 for Jaquez. 75-73 Gonzaga. 33.7 to go. Tiger Campbell driving left into the paint. Gets it to Bailey. Left wing 3 for the lead. It's good! Bailey hit it! 12.2 to go. Timeout UCLA. Amari Bailey, the freshman, steps up and knocks down a big-time 3. UCLA leads by 1, 76-75, 12.2 to go. The Bruins have risen from the dead.
With 52 seconds left, UCLA was still trailing by 8. 52 seconds left, they're still trailing by 8. They get a pair of free throws. Then, back-to-back 3-point plays for Jaime Jaquez. Then they end up putting Drew Timmy on the free throw line, only to see him miss both. He was probably tired too because his were coming up short as well. And then that incredible moment for Amari Bailey with 13 seconds to go. This is coming off of the Timmy miss free throws. He hits a three-point shot that actually gives the Bruins the lead. Crazy. There's a timeout then. And at this point, Gonzaga is staring at another early exit, falling short of their goal once again. So talk about the wild momentum swings, the kind that can make you seasick. And yet that's what gives a game that madness feel and makes it worthy of the hashtag.
Strother will get it in. Salas picks it up. Clock starts. 11 seconds. Salas across the timeline. Pitch it back. Strother. Deep three from the top of the key. Got it! Oh, he hit it! Strother from the top. 7 seconds left. Campbell on the run. Into the front court. Drives the right side. Stripped away. Strother's got it. Fouled with 1.1 to go. The Vegas native pulls up from deep and puts Gonzaga in the lead and then gets a steal at the other end. Strother walking, staring into the crowd. What a shot by Strother, who has had a tough night with his heels in the March Madness logo, drills a three. And with 1.1 to go, he can ice it. Gonzaga leads 78-76.
The play was little dribble handoff action, see if we could, get a defense on their heels a bit. And initially when Coach drew it, he kind of drew just search it a little bit, maybe go downhill. And I kind of just asked him, like, can I shoot it? Like, if no one steps up on me, like, do you want me to shoot it? And he was like, absolutely. So then I shot it.
So then I shot it. Heel on the logo. So not quite midcourt, but definitely Steph Curry range. Cool for Julian Strother, who is a Las Vegas native. And yes, it took all hands on deck, but man, from 13 down to 10 up to a point down in the final few seconds to that deep three from Strother that gives Gonzaga the lead and yet still having to survive one last ditch attempt by UCLA. You want to talk about heart palpitations. Drew Timmy does a lot of damage early, 36 points for him. And obviously just the attention he attracts and the experience that he brings, part of this rally in the second half.
We just got hit in the mouth and we just had to battle and fight. And, in the first half, I just the ball happened to be bouncing friendly to me. So I felt like I was hot. So I just wanted to keep shooting. And then in the second half, everyone, like Malachi really stepped up. Julian stepped up. Tom was playing huge defense. Like, we just rallied. And I think that's just kind of the story of this year. You know, the first 20, as much as we might not like it to be, is probably not our best 20. But we somehow, some way, we dig deep and we find a way to just come together and rally and keep fighting. And I think that's the beauty of this team is we may be down, but we're not out.
We got knocked back much like we did in the TCU game. I think that this time it was just because of their will and toughness. We were not guarding well, or for whatever reason, our ball screen coverage is – defense slipped back to where it was in November, and it has not been like that the last six or seven weeks. So I just challenged him on that, and I said, we got 20 minutes. That's plenty of time. We're not going to – there's no 10-point play I'm going to draw up, but we just – possession by possession, we got to play better defense. And we just had some really uncharacteristic kind of bonehead turnovers in the first half, too. Air dribbles, and I think we lost like three bouncing it and traveling and doing all kinds of stuff. So – challenge them on that regard to start taking care of the ball. And you've been with us all year. I mean, this is such a resilient crew, man. They just find a way to win. It's probably not as aesthetically pleasing as some of the other teams we've had up there. But, I mean, man, is it effective.
I got to tell you, these two wins tonight by Kansas State, which we'll get to, and Gonzaga really gave producer Jay a boost in his bracket. We were checking out brackets earlier, and this may have solidified his win. I was leading because I picked a bunch of the upsets in the first couple rounds, but he had the potential for far more points than me. And so these were two critical pieces for him. His champion is still alive, although my champion is still alive too. Now, he still has all of his final four intact. I do not, but I do have two of the final four teams, and I still got my champion intact. So Jay may be gaining on me, but it could be a dynamic duel, if you will. All right, coming up, we will hear from UCLA as well, Mick Cronin, and the Bruins, who were down two starters, gave it absolutely everything they had, but you could see how exhausted they were. The toll of a long season and the travel and being pushed to the limit by Gonzaga. So this one hurts, of course, because they had the lead. They just ran out of gas. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page. We're so glad to have you with us. We'll be going piece by piece through the Sweet 16 games in New York and Vegas. And top of the hour, we'll head to T-Mobile Arena. Arash Markazi will join us coming up then, but love to hear from you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
With a dribble out front. Tiger Campbell driving left into the paint. Gets it to Bailey. Left wing three for the lead. It's good! Bailey hit it! 12.2 to go. Timeout UCLA. Amari Bailey, the freshman, steps up and knocks down a big time three. Hawkes will throw it in. Neubel makes the catch off the Campbell. Puts it up in the buzzer. No! And Gonzaga wins! The Gonzaga Bulldogs are elite again. Gonzaga comes back from 13 down. They beat UCLA 79-76, and the Gonzaga Bulldogs on to the Elite Eight.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Congratulations to Gonzaga, and thank you to Gonzaga and UCLA for providing one capper, one hell of a capper to this first night of Sweet 16 hoops. From Las Vegas, from New York, doubleheaders in both places, and we will get to all four games. Kind of feel like it's an NFL Sunday where we can pick apart each of these games. We have a little more time to do that. Ryan Radke with the calls on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. So again, if you missed it, UCLA was up 13 at the half, but there were signs that they were sucking wind. They were already getting tired. They were down two starters, so their key guys were playing heavy minutes. Meanwhile, Gonzaga, this is their pattern. It's their modus operandi. They are a second-half team. They seem to steady. They draw on the experience of the guys that they've got out there, and they know how to turn it on. And you hear the R word over and over again when it comes to these Gonzaga Bulldogs.
Words can't describe how proud I am of just our team and our resilience. I mean, nothing was going our way. I mean, we weren't playing our brand of basketball at all through that whole first half. And, I mean, we flipped that switch. And, you know, there's not a lot of teams in the country who could you know, bind together and make a run like that.
Going into every game feeling like we got something to prove. And just going out there with the mentality like, you know, we got nothing to lose. Let's go out swinging. And just have a chip on our shoulder and just play for each other. And that's what I was saying.
Our boy Malachi Smith had him on the show on Sunday night following the selection show. And his story is unique because this time last year, he had just finished up an NCAA tournament run with Chattanooga. Right, so Chattanooga gets in because they win the Southern Conference. He's playing from a mid-major perspective, but then he hits the transfer portal. He decides to go to Gonzaga because he wants the chance to win a championship. Now here he is, and he has had major contributions off the bench for Gonzaga. So he's not a starter, but instead he comes in and he scores 12 points in the second half. Only had 2 points in the first half for the Zags, but a dozen in the second half, plus some big defensive moments. And so Gonzaga moves on and has another opportunity here It's not as though the road gets easier. In fact, it's the opposite. And to think about the Bulldogs and the Huskies of UConn at the next step, woo! I mean, those are, again, both blue bloods in college basketball. And so nothing comes easy when you get this deep in the tournament. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You all know how much I love rebounding, and the Zags, they crushed it on the boards. Nearly doubling up the Bruins on the glass, 50-26. Now, a lot of that has to do with the number of shots that were missed by UCLA, right? So that stands to reason, the more shots that are missed, the more rebounds that are available. And in that second half, UCLA went 12-plus minutes without a field goal. But here's another critical stat. The Bruins gave up 16 offensive rebounds. So again, Gonzaga was much more active, probably had a little more energy in their legs too. Mick Cronin was in no mood to answer questions following this game. And we'll get the lowdown from Arash Markazi when he joins us from Vegas in 30 minutes. But apparently, instead of UCLA being the first team to get to the press room, usually it's the losing team that goes first so they can get out of there. And obviously the winning team a lot of time is celebrating and is enjoying their time together in their locker room a little bit. Well, apparently Gonzaga went first. I'm not sure why. And by the time Mick Cronin got to the podium, he was asked for his opening statement and he had enough.
I don't have one. My opening statement is it just took 33 minutes to get me in here, which is ridiculous. Any questions?
Well, if you put it that way, so right, already feeling like he didn't really want to answer for what had just happened. I'm sure it's a bitter pill to swallow considering how the second half went. But coach, if you wouldn't mind, what did happen in that second half scoring drought when you were 10 plus minutes without a field goal?
A lot of open shots didn't go down. There's no hindsight. Wide open shots, and multiple times we got fouled, no call. Dave and Tiger didn't make a basket in the second half. They had good looks. And Jaime got murdered on about four layups.
Murdered. Strong visual imagery. So Mick Cronin, as I say, he's salty, probably because of the loss. It stings a little bit, but also didn't like the way that the business was handled there in Vegas. Speaking of Tiger, Tiger Campbell, who, as he points out, was scoreless in the second half. He was asked whether or not the Bruins could have or should have done something differently during that drought.
I'd say we ran some really good sets to go at what we thought was, you know, we could take advantage of. And we got some really good looks, and we just weren't able to knock them in. So I would say that our drought was just due to us getting good shots and not making them.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, that is exactly what we see this time of the year. You can be a really good basketball team, but you've got to be able to capitalize on your opportunities. And so once again, analytics, shooting percentages, all kinds of stats, they can shape your decisions for a game. You can look at them and think, okay, I know how this is going to play out, but we're talking about human beings that still have to perform. In some cases, it's the biggest stage of their lives. And in some cases, they rise to the occasion, like Marquise Noel, who we'll talk about coming up following the update. And in some cases, the shots just don't go down. That's what we love about sports. All the predictions and the stats and the analytics and the next gen numbers, all of those that you can come up with, can never predict human resiliency and heart and how we perform as people under pressure. Sometimes you're just feeling it. That's certainly the case for Marquise Noel. Sometimes you got a freshman who hails from the town in which you're playing and he has the shot of his life. Sometimes that's just how it breaks down.
Yeah.
Jay sent me a text attempting to simulate our new favorite Karl Anthony Towns drop. Yeah. I've been practicing. I feel like you spelled it wrong though, Jay. I feel like you didn't. You had it. Let me see. I want to go look back on it. You had it as yup.
Yup, yeah.
No, it's not a yup. It's a yuh.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a yeah. It's not a yup.
No P in there?
No P. Marco, do you hear a P?
I do not hear a P.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe on that first one I hear, but then it kind of goes away.
No, there's no P. Stop trying to backtrack. There's no P. There's no P in yeah. So there's no P on a Thursday night on After Hours. All right, so we'll get to Kansas State, Michigan State next, plus UConn as well. The Hurley family tradition in March, it continues on in a different form. Now it's Dan Hurley with the spotlight. It's After Hours on our show Twitter or our Facebook page. We have a brand new YouTube video up, so take a few minutes. It's actually pretty short. It's not even 6 minutes, which is rare for us, especially me, because I tend to be long-winded. I mean, you got to fill 4 hours somehow, don't you? People ask me all the time, so do you ever run out of things to say? And my honest answer, Marco, is I don't remember the last time I ran out of things to say. Not just that, but I don't remember the last time I got to everything that I wanted to get to.
Well, and that's good. That's good show prep right there.
Thank you.
That's a little pull back the curtain. That's good show prep. If you've gotten to everything, that means you didn't prep enough.
Oh,
so that's good job.
Wow. I feel so validated right now. Thank you, Marco. Did I mention we have a box of candy?
Last night you did mention that, yes.
And you wouldn't take any. Can I convince you yet tonight?
Probably, yes.
All right.
Yes.
We've got all kinds of stuff. Can. Twizzlers, different M&Ms, a bunny with, what are those gold-wrapped candies called? Rocher? What do we call them?
The Ferrero Rocher?
Yeah. An entire plastic bunny full of those.
Those are good.
Our thanks to Carlos
those
again.
Really
I actually gave away the Pez dispensers, though, because... Well, I offered them to you for your kiddos, and you said, no, I really don't want my kiddos
to have... I appreciate it. We got like six of them already in the house. Yeah, I don't need that.
So, from the morning show, Sean Marash, the DA show here on CBS Sports Radio, he's got two little girls, and apparently they're in love with Pez dispensers. So, he was all excited. I gave him the Pez dispensers and one of a bag of jelly beans, because I don't want to turn into a jelly bean. Yeah, we have a whole nother bag of Starburst jelly beans.
I'm a little confused by that.
By Sean or by
the... No, the fact that, I mean, they stole your candy. They gave you this BS line about community candy, and then they stole all your candy, and then you get a big giant box of candy, and the first thing you do is give it to them.
Well, I gave them the peeps, too. The challenge is this, though. I've worked really hard to be in shape and to... I lost a bunch of weight. I'm in training for another half marathon. If I keep all this candy, it runs counter to my self-control, my willpower. So it's better to give some of it away.
No,
don't you worry. We kept
fair.
The best.
That's fair.
We kept the M&Ms. We kept the Starburst jelly beans. We kept the chocolate and the Twizzlers. So I promise you, we did not give away the good stuff.
Again, this is your big giant box of candy. I'm surprised because you were very, very annoyed by them stealing your candy.
That was
candy.
Mostly Pete.
Yeah, that show is kind of in one.
They're in
so,
cahoots.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah. Poor Jay. Jay actually not only got duped by Pete with the whole candy stash thing and had our candy locked up and unavailable, and then it just magically disappeared, but somehow something went horribly wrong in Pete's life on Thursday morning, and he sends Jay a text about an hour into our show. Hey, I'm going to need you to stay for my show. And Jay's like, hell to the gnaw. But he did have to stay an extra hour. So then you know how the traffic is. For those people who don't know, our headquarters are in Lower Manhattan. If I don't leave literally 5 minutes after the show is over, it takes me an extra 15, 20 minutes to get home because the traffic is so brutal, you know, early morning traffic,
and
right?
And let me just throw in 15, 20 minutes only because you're going opposite of traffic.
Well,
you're going opposite.
It's just traffic in New York.
I know, but you're going opposite. Think about how long it would be.
Right, but when you get to New Jersey, it's not really opposite. I'm going. So anyway, so it just takes like 5 minutes can cost you another 20 minutes on the roads, right? So Jay gets out of here an hour late. Oh, poor guy. How long did it take you to get home?
About an hour and 22 minutes.
Oh, so it took him like a good 30 minutes longer.
Instead of about 38 minutes.
Yes, about 38 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We've got this down to a science. So Jay had a rough Thursday morning.
It was never again. Leaving at that time.
I'm never. So he's been duped twice, not only into staying an extra hour, but he lost our candy stash. I feel like you should never accept Pete's. Oh, and he's Pete's alarm clock. You know that or not. So Pete, who's on the DA show following us, he wakes up at, you know, like an hour, maybe 90 minutes into our show, right? He actually asks Jay, like Jay's his mom or something, to send him a text message and to call him and wake him up just in case.
What?
I know.
Well, see, that I don't mind as much because if I don't wake him up, then he's not here, then I have to stay here until 10.
Well, that's true, right?
I'd rather just get him here.
So if Pete doesn't wake up and hear his alarm and he comes in late, then guess whose job it is to stay here? So, but isn't that crazy? It's like,
what are we doing?
You're an adult. You live with people. Make them wake you up.
What are we doing?
That's what I said.
I've never heard of such a thing in my life. Look, I can understand
Chase's mom.
If there was once or twice, like, look, I'm on like an hour of sleep. Just wake me up if you can.
No.
I'm busted.
Single morning.
I'm on my third shift in the last whatever. Like,
no.
Help me out.
No.
Every day?
Every single morning, Jay has to
every day
send him a text or wake him up with a phone call.
Often, but I mean,
that's what
got
you
a baby.
Told me.
I'm helping him
you told
out.
Me it's, every
it's,
day.
It's often. It's often.
He's fudging right now. It's every single morning that he has to be Pete's backup alarm clock.
That's weak.
It is weak. That's what I said. I'm like, you're an adult.
You're a grown man.
Figure it out. How come no one's my backup alarm clock? Like, I know.
Figure it out. And you know what? If you need somebody to help out, I understand. It shouldn't be a coworker.
It should be your wife or your mom.
Well, I understand why it's not either one of those people, too, because it's in the middle of the night. You don't want your wife to wake up because that's going to cause more issues. I get it, but find somebody else. Find somebody else.
Although I guess Jay's perspective is valid in that if Pete doesn't show up, guess who the responsibility falls on? Yeah,
but again, what are we doing here? If he doesn't show up, you have a job,
right? I'm with you. No, I'm with you.
You have a job?
If you don't show up, then maybe somebody else should do your job.
Get to your job.
Be my lawyers.
Come on now.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, now that we've completely put Pete on blast.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Herriman has the rebound for UConn. Hand it off Jackson. Huskies run in transition. Jackson with it on the left side. Into Sanogo, wide open, lays it in with the right hand. And Eric Musselman has to take a timeout. It's a 14-0 Connecticut run. Their lead balloons to 17. Here's Hawkins curling right down the lane, right to the rim, lays it up and in. 24 in the ball game for Jordan Hawkins, 75-48 UConn. Walsh comes out to stay close on him. Double comes from Black, get it over to Newton high on the right. Newton bounces to Sanogo, wide open on the right side, and Sanogo gently lays it in with the right hand. 16 for Sanogo, 79-56. 5:07 to go. Arkansas starting to gamble, and Connecticut really taking advantage. Inbound to Darian Ford. Ford will dribble across the timeline. Down to 5 seconds left. He'll make the pass to Dunning. He'll drop it down into the right corner. 1 second left. The coaches shake hands. This one is over, and Connecticut is on to the Elite Eight.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Ryan Radke on the NCAA Westwood One Radio Network, also from Las Vegas. And in 15 minutes, we will welcome Arash Markazi, who was sitting not just courtside, but right off the corner. Man, the videos from his Twitter are phenomenal. You can not only see clearly the end of Gonzaga, UCLA, but the roars inside T-Mobile Arena are amazing. So I'm excited to talk to him after he's done with his work. So 15 minutes, he'll join us live from Sin City. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. As close, as tight, as epic, as entertaining as Gonzaga and UCLA, UConn, Arkansas was that lopsided. The Huskies are locked in. They now have 3 tournament wins by 15 plus points. Next up, Gonzaga. Arkansas never found an offensive rhythm. Now, Arkansas wants to play a lot like a Houston, where they want their physical, tough defense, their athleticism. They want that defense to lead to offensive opportunities. They're not a finesse team. This is a pound you into submission team with Eric Musselman. And yes, they had reached 3 consecutive Sweet 16s, which is something that not a lot of schools and not a lot of programs can claim. But they ran into a UConn team that was locked in and led by as many as 29 in this one. They really had no answer for the Huskies, who shot 57% from the field. And here's something else that I loved about what I saw from UConn. 22 assists on 31 made baskets. That is a very high rate of assist to turnovers, actually, but a high rate of sharing the basketball. And that was how they kept the Arkansas defense chasing. 22 assists on 31 made buckets. The Arkansas defense never really got comfortable, and that's a credit to UConn. Aggressive. They were so aggressive in this game and took the lead from the beginning. But it was only a year ago that Dan Hurley's team lost in a 5-12 matchup in the opening round to New Mexico State, and they were not going to forget it.
Where we are right now is exactly where we talked about where we would be when we got together after we lost the first round game last year. We met in that boardroom, and the three of us sat together, and we talked about this is where we were going to be. Wow. So we're exactly where we thought we would be, and obviously we're thrilled to play one more to go to the Final Four.
He really just told us, like, things are going to change now. And he had told us we're all captains and that we also, like, hold part of that on our shoulders too. We're going to take part of that blame when you feel that pain. So we really just, from that moment on, from that day on, we just all held each other to a higher standard and just told each other that, you know what I mean, we're gonna push for a national championship. We're going to push for that type of standard every day in practice, and we're going to hold each other to that.
Andre Jackson, he's collaborating with what Coach Hurley indicated. We had a meeting a year ago, and we decided we were going to use this, and this was going to be a reminder every day for a year until we had another opportunity. Meanwhile, for Eric Musselman, it's a tough exit.
I'm speaking for all the players and the coaches. Give UConn a ton of credit. Thought from the opening tip, they came out with a great sense of urgency. They cut hard. They crashed the offensive boards, especially early in the game. They did a great job rebounding the ball for the entire 40 minutes. And uncharacteristically, we did not defend at the level that we have for most of the year.
And that is a credit to UConn, as Eric Musselman indicates. The Huskies were the aggressor, and here they are into the Elite Eight for the first time since 2014, seeking their fifth national championship. So a blue blood there as well. Vegas we go next here on CBS Sports Radio.